The Greed of the Lone Wolf.
I am the Lone Wolf. I am under cover of day and night. I conduct surveillance, reconnaissance, and intelligence on my enemies. I do not join groups or organizations due to informants, agent provocateurs, and troublemakers. I avoid being on a list. Even if I'm on a list, I have a list of data on them also. I know where they live, where they go shopping, where their kids go to school, where their spouse works, what model their vehicle is, where their relatives live, where they go for recreation, who their friends are, their habits, and even their birthdays. I studied and researched people like the Unabomber, BTK Wichita, Kansas serial killer, Eric Rudolph, and others the same, and learned from their mistakes. I'm prepared for the coming war. I'm ready when the line is crossed. My Aryan race, liberties, and freedoms are infringed upon. For now, I never engage in terrorism or violent acts until the time comes. I don't start the trouble. My enemies do that and shall give me the excuse to fight back. I am prepared if I am detained and arrested or questioned by authorities who have no authority over me, but do my best to avoid being a person of interest. I keep records in my brain on my enemies and avoid having electronic data devices and computer with information on them in case they are confiscated if I do. They are secretly hidden away from my property, including how-to books, weapons, equipment needed for the coming war. I protect my information and my informants and sources the best I can who are working inside the government and non-government agencies who provide me with intelligence information to better myself and others when the coming battle begins. I create phony websites on a white supremacist gang and leaflets on this gang to neighborhoods, even some graffiti and plant evidence to make it look like there's a gang in the area scaring and confusing ignorant whites, race mixers, liberal media, non-whites, and law enforcement. They can't figure it out. It's called PSYOPs. I am the underground secret freedom fighter and independent. I'm in your neighborhood. I'm in your schools. I'm in your police departments, bars, coffee shops, malls, and so on. I am the Lone Wolf.
And this is the Insurgent Radio Network.
And this is the Insurgent Radio Network right here in Warsaw, Indiana, north central Indiana, and we've still got quite a bit of snow out there all over the state. I traveled through at least half of the state the other day, and it's all covered with snow. That's right. But it's not too cold. It's in the 20s. It could be a lot worse. Hey, it's February the 14th, St. Valentine's Day. Whoa! Yeah, Freya's Day. And I think we ought to get a song on here for our main squeeze, the wives and the sweethearts and the all that stuff. Let me put one on here for the ladies today.
The way the world came at you left you bitter and confused. The more I tried to guide your path, the more you just felt used. The sun comes up tomorrow, but there are no guarantees. It can rock you like a baby, it can knock you to your knees. The path that lies between us is a star-crossed avenue. I've done everything I can, there's nothing I can do. So you love that girl to death, and you're scared to take a breath. It's like everything you dread swings a hammer in your head. So her heart's locked in a vault, and you think it's all your fault. It's a dream as old as dirt. Can't stand to see her hurt. May the little voice that guides you send a message through from me, reminding you you're beautiful and will forever be. I wish that I could be there now to tell you it's all right. It's a dark and daunting razor's edge you're walking on tonight. The sun comes up tomorrow, but there are no guarantees. It can rock you like a baby, it can knock you to your knees. The path that lies between us is a rough and rocky route. I've done everything I can, and there's nothing I can do. So you're learning to let go, and the process is so slow. And while your baby plumbs the depths, you keep climbing up the steps. She was daddy's little girl. You were ruler of the world. Now she's out there in the fray. Ah, but she'll be back someday. Heard me say a million times, my work is never done. For those who keep the wolves at bay, there is no setting sun. To see you standing here today, pray child, you've come so far. Which proves that you can find your way, no matter where you are. Sun comes up tomorrow, but there are no guarantees. It can rock you like a baby, it can knock you to your knees. The path that lies between us is the long way home, it's true. I've done everything I can, and there's nothing I can do. I've done everything I can.
My old buddy Rodney Crowell. Yeah, he's not a real well-known singer, but he has a certain following. He's the one that sang, he had a hit song with "The Whole World Runs on Sex and Gasoline." But he's done a lot of other good songs there. So that goes out to our She-Wolves today on Valentine's Day. And don't forget a tip from old Tommy Boy here. Remember, always, if you follow this, you'll probably be okay. Keep your mind clear and be able to figure things out. There is no equality. None at all. No one is born equal. No one is born equal, that's for sure. And you go into court and see about equality. They say equality under the law. That's BS. In fact, any attorney will tell you that if he's going to be truthful, they go shopping for the right judge when they have a problem. When they have a case that doesn't look too good, they try to get involved with a judge that is a liberal if you've got bad troubles, and a conservative if you want to hammer somebody. So anyhow, that goes on all the time. And there are no rights. There are privileges that are granted and allowed to the serfs, and as long as they behave. And if they don't behave, they take them away. So there are no rights. And don't forget, no spooks in the sky. We got billions of people running around this planet believing in spooks in the sky. And their livelihoods and everything else are pretty well screwed up. They're starving to death and everything else because they're waiting for some reward off in the future sometime. So you're going to have to put up with the government. You're going to have to put up with all these bastards, because if you do, you'll be rewarded later. Well, I believe in might is right. Take the stuff. Take it, man. Take it. Well, boys and girls, ding, 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 ding. Here's another little piece of the great book Siege for you on this Freya's Day. That's right. We're going to read to you a little bit from James Mason's Siege. Okay, here we go. You ready? You know, you can take notes, too. Probability at this stage of... Well, we've got a call coming in. Well, that was an associate out there looking for the new telephone number lines for our messages. Incidentally, while I've got you on here, that number is 559-670-1473. And I need to change that. Message has been on there quite a while. And then the other number is 641-715-3800. But you also have to put in 56890#. Yeah. So anyhow, that's done. Let's get back to school here. At this stage of things, kidding ourselves would probably prove fatal. Sooner or later, I urge against taking it on the chin or leading with the chin, as there are violent revolutionary types out there aplenty to get things kicked off good and proper. Blacks, every shade of color in between, not to mention the fanatic reds and so forth, plus the nuts and more nuts. Add to this the slowly but steadily deteriorating conditions of the country, economic and otherwise, and you have a cake baking in the oven. You don't want your cake to fall, and you certainly don't want to get yourself burned. Instead, you want to be around for the icing, and most definitely the eating of the cake. Meanwhile, the final seizure of power and exercising of the same. Most communist outfits share so much in common with the Democrat Party platform that they'd be stupid to start any general disorder, and they know it. Only the extreme left can be looked to for hope in this area. Black and colored nationalists as well. The cities, where these types reign supreme anyway, will always be the first to erupt when it's time for things to jump off. As far as the first wave up against the system's pigs is concerned, I'd much rather it be them instead of us. They're primed and psyched up for it already, armed to the very teeth, and suffer no shortage of expendable manpower. And any blame would be leveled towards them in the event of a miscarriage. Wish them well. Recall the cornerstone of the U.S. National Socialist Movement's grand strategy of the 60s? Rings crazy as hell today in light of the developments over the past 10 years, or 15. It involved depending upon and even helping the pigs against the urban revolutionaries. We'd be absolute idiots to attack the pigs ourselves in any attempt to initiate something of the nature of a general rebellion. I cannot urge strongly enough, stay out of their way, deprive them completely of any excuse to come after you. This does not mean stay legal, it means stay sane and national or rational, and stay alive and at full liberty, because dead or locked up, you're no good to yourself or the revolution. Let the revolutionary mobs, over whom we have no control and who would also kill us, take the brunt of the first strongest system counterattacks, and let these same numberless mobs in the cities chew the hell out of the system's hired elite. It couldn't happen to a sweeter bunch. There'll probably be more than one revolution back to back, the reds and the blacks, because this is what they've preached and prepared for all along, can be expected to lead the way. In the opening days and weeks of this phase, we can watch how the system is going to react and how well it reacts. For us to attempt the same thing in the middle of an atmosphere of order would be outright suicide. Once there exists an air of disorder, the cards will be more in our favor. And we'll be dealing in small cities and towns, the countryside, where it might be possible to take things without massive death and destruction that will occur in the major cities. Ultimatums, backed up by very real force, handed to local governments once they've learned what's happening in the big city brethren, might just work wonders. In other words, small is beautiful. Only after the system is broken and discredited will there come a hope of mobilizing the masses of whites to tackle the job of winning what will soon enough assume the characteristic of a civil war. Until then, for the present, give the pigs nothing to do regarding ourselves, but sit and get edgy. Once the shooting starts, keep out of the way of the mobs, because they only perceive us as friends and allies of the capitalists and the system. In the opening phases of any revolution, if the red mobs don't get you, the pigs will. Let them instead kill one another. Developments will progress rapidly once all central power is gone and people realize they have nothing to lose anyhow. That was written September 1985, and it's just as true today as it was then. In fact, I think it's more true today than it was then. Well, let's go one more page or two on this, because it's very good to reread it. I've read it before a few times, but perhaps you haven't, or maybe you've heard similar things from other people. Terrorism redefined. Do we still happily accede to wearing just any favorite smear term the Jew system and its media chooses to hang on us, like the way Commander Rockwell did with adopting the term Nazi? Or do we draw a line at how far we'll allow these misnomers to go? Of course, to them it doesn't matter, and neither does it matter to the sheepish masses of Goyim what they call us or how we are thought of. But it does matter to us, the way we view ourselves and the nature of our struggle. We should not consider ourselves terrorists any more than we should consider ourselves racist, even though we accept both as facts of life. Nor should we take it lightly when members of the right, who should know better, refer to us as such. We need to keep our definitions straight. Who is a terrorist? when considering the hundreds of thousands of elderly whites who are frightened to death inside and outside their homes on an unending basis because the system coddles and protects the criminal element officially, is that not terrorism? Brainwashed and taste-making aside, when any individual knows clearly in his or her mind that to buck the Jewish liberal-inspired consensus on everything from race to sex habits will lead to public ostracism and the loss of employment, if not outright legal persecution. Is that not terrorism? Kids brutalized and intimidated on a daily basis, year in and year out, because the savages they are forced into school buildings with because of government policy. Is that not terrorism? Millions of white workers struggling against losing odds with taxes and inflation, facing losses of homes and all forms of security, oftentimes wondering where food is going to come from or where the winter heat will come from because of the official Jewish capitalist economy and the mafia-style Internal Revenue Service. Is this not terrorism? Yes, it most definitely is terrorism. And on a monumental scale. Worse than that, it is terrorism without the guts to present itself as such. But just as Adolf Hitler pointed out regarding the Jewish use of the big lie technique, if you do it big enough, no one will recognize it for what it actually is. A case for the kettle calling the pot black, because it is the system which owns the controls of the media. None of the above outlined horrors are described as what they in reality are. But let one individual or a small group of individuals dare to strike back. That, to the controlled media and softened brains of the masses, is terrorism. That gets the dirty name because it is small scale and direct. It is a game, and a game is a farce. We can expect no better from them, but we must get it straight in our minds if this struggle is to succeed. Most of the country's founding fathers believed that the rights of the white man who built the country would be guaranteed by the petition and redress clauses written in the Constitution. But other men, like Thomas Jefferson, didn't think so. Neither did Benjamin Franklin, who accurately predicted just what shape this country would be in by the time of its bicentennial, with the Jews in the counting houses and whites toiling away like slaves in the field. And with the sold-out government flying directly in the faces of the interests of the will of the majority, it is tyranny which rules this land today, nothing more or less. It is an alien tyranny and a Big Brother 1984-style tyranny, because we don't even enjoy the dubious pleasure of knowing or being able to see our tyrant. But one thing is known, he's not white. It is a tyranny hiding under a cloak of democracy, a clever disguise which prevents any blame from being placed on, and which the monster, to perpetuate itself through chicanery, referred to as the two-party system. It is true that the removal of one or a dozen goyish frontmen will not alter or remedy the situation. Only a total revolution can change it. But there must be a beginning, that first step in a thousand-mile journey, and the first steps are always the hardest. When speaking of terrorism, a line must be drawn between two types of terrorism: selective and indiscriminate. Some members of the movement howl and complain over system persecution. True, this is an example of selective terrorism, because I assure you facing the system's prisons can be a terrifying prospect. Let's see here. But as Uncle Adolf said, unless one picks up the daily Jewish press and sees himself slandered and vilified therein, he simply had wasted the previous day. Comrades, you must expect the system will attack, but when it does, for God's sake, let it be for something. No more damnable, pitiable frame-ups. Bring the attack to the enemy. with regard to indiscriminate terrorism, the only difference between the prevailing conditions I outlined earlier in this segment and, for example, a black massacre of a white settlement is the degree of subtlety used and the time lapse. A Katanga savage with a machete or an IRS agent in a gray flannel suit, take your pick, your money or your life. These methods are designed for three purposes: to cow a population, to fleece a population, or to annihilate a population. Not infrequently do all these three happen, one after the other. Terrorism is a two-way street, for, as Uncle Adolf stated, the only answer to terrorism is stronger terrorism. We do face a naked tyranny here in the United States, and it's employing terrorism too. First, wipe out the whites as a majority force, and ultimately wipe them out as a race altogether. The system knows that we know that we are left no choice whatsoever. It is fight or die. We then are out to liberate a nation from alien tyranny. It won't be easy. When the lightning is striking, blows are falling, history is turning, the stupid ones are groaning. Oh, isn't this violence awful, we say. Quote, to hell with such lily livers, that they haven't seen anything yet. And that was printed in November 1981. And that's the end of the reading from Siege by James Mason. I'm not sure whether I mentioned this before or not. On the Discovery Channel, someone has been calling me and telling me they're airing what they call The Evil Twin, which is about the Mahan brothers. And I have not been able to find it, but keep an eye out for it. I understand there's some guys playing the brothers that don't look anything like the brothers, just bearded fat guys. The Mahan brothers were not that. So if you catch that, you might want to watch it and see what it has to say. I'll eventually get it. Yesterday, DC Scout, I believe it was him, or somebody was talking about the use of like cyanide in rifle shells and so forth. Well, that happened back in the 60s, and I remember exactly when it happened. The Oakland, California superintendent of schools, I believe it was, I know he was connected with the schools, got on the bad list of the black revolutionaries up there. And they shot him, which normally would not have been a death-dealing shot. But they had taken hollow points and put cyanide poison in the front and then closed them off. And when you hit somebody with that, no matter where you hit them, if it reaches the blood supply, they're going to die. So anyhow, that's a case where it actually was done in Oakland, California, back in the 60s. I'm going to send out to you the method of getting right into the SPLC board and making comments to the SPLC, as long as they allow you. So I'm going to send that along to you in case you want to have some fun with the SPLC. Well, in case you'd like to attend, there's going to be a big annual conference in New York City of some of these top Jewish speakers and leaders. Going to be on April 6th at the New York Marriott Marquis Hotel. That's Marquis Hotel. So if you'd like to get yourself some tickets and get in, I'm sure there's a way you can, and say hello. Okay. Yeah. But watch out you don't get hit over the head with a placard from probably all the Palestinians that are going to be out there demonstrating against this thing. Keep telling you, American predatory capitalism and their adventures with their military arm, their enforcers, into the Middle East, is causing tremendous amount of disruption in all these countries, and a lot of these people are trying desperately to get out. So where do they head? They head for Europe. And so so when you're demonstrating against these people or wanting to kick them out, remember the people who caused them to be there in the first place, and that's your military-industrial complex and predatory capitalists. Dateline, Brussels. Bulgaria has recently seen a surge in xenophobic attacks since the Syrian war broke out. Syrian refugees escaping the horrors of the war started arriving, but it appears what these refugees have found in Bulgaria isn't much better than what they left behind. Last year, roughly 11,600 migrants and asylum seekers crossed into Bulgaria from Turkey, most of them Syrian. Human rights organizations expect tens of thousands to make the journey across the Turkish border in coming months. You know, and perhaps that's what was the plan in the very beginning by disrupting these countries in the Middle East, is to cause them to go into other countries and disrupt those countries. It's an interesting plan. Meanwhile, these rats at the top continue their military occupations. But the mass influx of migrants has triggered a wave of nationalistic fervor, goaded by public statements by right-wing leaders. Last month, several neo-Nazi factions, including the local branch of the International Blood and Honor Skinhead Network, formed the Nationalist Party in Bulgaria, which says it wants to cleanse Bulgaria from the foreign and alien immigrant scum that have been flooding the towns of Bulgaria. Well, here we go with the right wing. Always, if there's any way to do it wrong, they're going to do it. Instead of pointing out the war criminals that are causing all this, they immediately jump to the, just like the guy that skinhead that has a beer and goes out on the street and jumps the first black street person he finds, and I'm going to solve this problem. I'm going to beat the hell out of this guy. The party has organized so-called civil patrols, which stop and check foreigners, and a portion of the general population thinks that this is a good idea. Of course, this is the system going to like this, because this gives the system a chance to get all the names, addresses, phone numbers, and everything of everybody that's involved in these civil patrols, so that when they desire, they can just sweep them all up and throw them in prison like they're doing with some of the Golden Dawn people. The surge of nationalist sentiment seems to be fueled by the Bulgarian government's lack of preparation and adequate response to the refugee crisis. Well, it's not the responsibility of a government to accept thousands and thousands of people that are coming into your country directly because of capitalist exploitation and occupation and the military-industrial complex in these countries. It's not their responsibility. It's the responsibility to not do what the predatory capitalists are doing along with their military in these other countries. The poorest member of the EU has struggled to provide even the most basic amenities. Doctors Without Borders warned of the disastrous lack of medical care as hundreds of Syrians have to sleep outdoors due to lack of shelters. Well, I hope by now you've been studying this thing long enough that you understand that the people behind the throne, the people in the ruling class, they know exactly what the chemistry of the entire thing all the time. They're never surprised because they study sociology and the mentality of the crowd and everything else, and they know exactly what's going to happen when they do something here is going to cause something over there. Just like NAFTA, the trade agreement that Clinton pushed over on us. He knew exactly what was going to happen. He knew everything he was saying was a big lie. But he knew it was going to further pauperize the agricultural people in Mexico. And what would they do? Well, they'd come to Papa United States. And so we, of course, do not like the fact that they're pouring in here, but they are the effect and not the cause. But the right wing always goes after the effect and not the cause. And that is the problem we always run into. And then, of course, the right wing in most countries is controlled just as much as the left. And, in fact, many of these people who lead in the right and the left are active agents of the system. Many of them are true believers. Many of them believe what they're doing is correct. But many are cynically working for the system itself. I'm not working for the system. I understand the game, and I hope you do too, that these Syrian people by the thousands pouring across the border into Bulgaria, they don't want to do that. I mean, just like when Ronald Reagan, the warmonger here in the United States, the so-called president, I think Nancy was president most of the time, but anyhow, when he was bombing and tearing the hell out of Nicaragua because he didn't think it was right for them to have a different kind of government than what he thought they should have, murdering people by the thousands. Well, what happened? The Nicaraguans came north. And they got through Mexico, and they came right on up to L.A. Now there's thousands of Nicaraguans in L.A. And that's what happens every time the military-industrial complex and the predatory capitalists go into the country to rob a country of some kind of product or anything. It always ends up this way. And then, of course, they always cover it up with, well, we did it because they were communists. Or we did it because they are fascists. Or we did it because, well, I don't know, we just didn't like them. And so we must, as insurgents, as lone wolves, always keep the eye on the cause. There's not a lot we can do about the effect. I'm sorry. I mean, every day I'd like to load up boxcars of these Mexicans and other people and take them back home. I don't have a desire to kill anybody. I don't have any desire to commit genocide on them. But we want them out. But, you see, then the system is all set up with fail-safe on that. Set up the right wing like a straw man, have a few violent acts take place, and that gives the system the excuse to come in and protect the invader, the migrant, from you. It's a clever game, because they wanted that cheap labor in the first place. It's such a con, but it's amazing how many people don't understand that. The conservatives certainly don't understand it. I mean, honest conservatives. I'm not talking about the phony sons of bitchin' conservatives, because they're not conservatives at all. If they really were conservatives, we would have conserved this country a long time ago, when we had a chance, back when there were some real conservatives around, at least up until the 60s and maybe into the 70s. But after that, the die was cast. The only thing that will ever change it is civil war or revolution. So I'm being straight out with you. There's not going to be any voting out of this mess, and I told you that over and over again. You're not going to do anything by joining a political party other than cause the party to collapse. the best thing that could happen is both Democrat and Republican parties collapse in disarray, and revolutionary parties arise. Now, they'll arise out of the mestizos, they'll arise out of the blacks, and they will hopefully arise out of us. But that's on farther down the road. So, you know, when I read this kind of stuff, this is just system propaganda here. Bulgaria's recent events are just the latest in a series of worrying developments involving neo-Nazi parties. Of course, they want to render everything down to neo-Nazi and right-wing. Since the rise of the right-wing Golden Dawn Party in Greece, far-right nationalist parties and movements seem to be gathering momentum all over Europe, carrying with them a disturbing brand of racism and xenophobia. Well, there's not that many of them. The press try to blow all this stuff out of proportion. These right-wing groups are very small and have very little power. And even like in Greece, if they get two or three guys into the parliament, you see now they're gradually breaking them up and arresting them. And I'm sure that most of those people were well-meaning people, but they go the right-wing way. And I put out the word to them, if you're going to support the working class in Greece and not the ruling class and not the police and so forth, then I'm with you. But if you're going to be a conservative-type right-wing outfit that's going to play into the hands of the ruling class, I don't want nothing to do with you. And everybody should get rid of that label of right-wing, you know. They have focused their actions on migrants and refugees coming to Europe to escape poverty, hunger, economic deprivation, civil wars, and other violent conflicts. But they don't go on to say why there's civil wars, economic deprivation. Gaddafi was running things pretty well. There's not a big problem in Libya. Women in Libya didn't have all this problem they do in some of those other Islamic countries. They had plenty of women in education and everything else. Now, obviously, Gaddafi is not the kind of guy I would want to be my local leader. I was scheduled to go over once and with some people and meet with him, but I didn't get out of the country because I had a court date that I couldn't go. But anyhow, and the same with Assad. If Assad is a son of a bitch, he's been a son of a bitch for a long time, including his father. But most people in Syria were living pretty well. So, I mean, you know, when you predatory capitalists have plans for that, whatever their plan is, they need the military and they need to bust it up and send in the CIA and blow up things. And anyhow, they have focused their actions. Okay, in Greece, the extreme right wing promotes the theory that migrants enter the country without well-organized plan to take Greece away from the Greeks. And they do not hesitate to use violence in their actions against them. Well, I would venture to say that a lot of those people will want to stay, maybe, but most of them want to go home. But they don't want to go home to a totally blown up country. And I'd venture to say if the economy was decent in Mexico, for the Mexican farmers and so forth, and if it wasn't such a ruling class New York manipulated country, that there'd be millions of Mexicans that have come to this country would go home. I knew a lot of these people in California, and a lot of them I knew told me that we don't want to stay here. We want to make some money and go home. I knew one fellow there, he had a family, and he told me, he said, look, I'm saving my money, I'm working, and I'm going back because I have a little ranch down there in Mexico, and that's where I want to be. So you see how the economic determinist pushes around. and how we kill each other off, or try to. So, anyhow, now they go down here and they talk about the Swedish resistance movement, a neo-Nazi group. See, always playing up this phony neo-Nazi label that became more active in 2012 after years of declining visibility. They have been linked to a killing of in the Stockholm area. So what? They killed one person? What? That's revolution? That's civil war? The group has also said it was responsible for an attack with stones, bottles, and fireworks on a group of 200 people holding an anti-racism demonstration in Stockholm in December 2013. Well, hell, I was attacked by 200 people in Oceanside, California, throwing bricks and bottles and stones. That's no big deal. In Slovakia, last November, Maria Kotlová, the leader of the ultra-nationalist, Our Slovakia Party, has been elected regional governor of the Banská Bystrica in central Slovakia. Kotlová, who once belonged to the now outlawed neo-Nazis, Slovenská Pospolitost movement, has expressed sympathy for the Nazi puppet state that ruled Slovakia during World War II. Well, here again, the right wing is being manipulated all over Europe. It was always too nationalistic, as far as I'm concerned, because I know the skinheads that were over there, and they wouldn't have anything to do with somebody from Poland, but they would have relations with Vietnamese. I know that for a fact. Not all of them, but some of them. So there you go. As long as racial people, separatists, pursue a right-wing solution, they're going to lose because they're being totally manipulated by the ruling class and by the predatory capitalists and so forth. Now, it should be very simple to see, but sometimes it takes people years to figure these things out. So don't fall into their trap and all that Alex Jones stuff and all this right-wing conservative and the Ron Paul stuff and all that. They all supported the war in Iraq and now in Afghanistan. Or at least they won't come out heavily against it. I was reading an article in a local paper the other day. And they were having a big meeting. It took place while I was gone, of these Christians, these fanatical Christians. Because as far as I'm concerned, all Christians are fanatics. And they were going to talk about how they're going to get up all this money to go down to Haiti and build houses. Now, that's insane. If there was any definition of insanity, that's surely it. Go down to Haiti and take your kids, a lot of them take their kids and everything, to build houses? Haiti is a black hole like Calcutta. It don't make any difference how many houses you build. They'll end up being burnt down or knocked down or something. If nature doesn't do it, the Negroes will. And so, but why aren't these people out in the streets demonstrating against the war in Afghanistan and the one in Iraq and all the killing in the Middle East? Why aren't they out there demonstrating against that? I don't see any of these churches turning out people, at least churches in the heartland, in the buckle of the Bible Belt, demonstrating against a system that's waging war and murdering people all over the world, and especially in the Middle East. Why is that? It would seem that that's more urgent than building a tar paper shack in Haiti for some nigger thug to lay around and just breed more people. There has to be serious mental problems with people like this. serious mental problems. Now, I'm not going to be very popular with the right wing over in Europe any more than I'm very popular with the right wing in this country, because these people won't change. They look for easy solutions, and usually the easy solution is probably wrong. However, the real crux of the thing, which I've explained to you, takes a little while. But it's so easy to always play one against the other in these things. It goes on and on and on. And the slave master at the top sits there holding the strings, laughing his ass off, whether you're the Soros on the left or whether you're the two brothers on the right, the billionaires that created the Tea Party, Koch brothers, who I've told you before, the father was one of Stalin's friends, helping Stalin with oil, which kept his people enslaved. So both sides, the right and the left, are controlled by billionaires. Of course, Soros is a Jew. The Koch brothers, I assume, are not Jewish. But they are spending tremendous amounts of money guiding the Tea Party and the right wing, always in the wrong direction. And Soros and people like that guiding the left wing in the wrong direction. I see in some of these European papers pictures of the same thing we've got here with the Hollywood Nazis, with guys with obviously the swastika flag. Here's a guy in a full SS uniform, and then other guys with the Nazi helmets on and everything like that. More Hollywood Nazis. And there's a lot of them over in Europe. Of course, they have to be more careful over there. They get thrown in jail. But we've got our own Hollywood Nazis here, going nowhere, doing nothing, just stirring a little teeny pot and getting a lot of people in trouble they don't need. Well, evidently, actor Black Samuel L. Jackson, who you're probably familiar with, on Monday laid into a reporter who seemingly confused him with fellow black actor Lawrence Fishburne during a live interview. You know, Fishburne got his start in Apocalypse Now. He was the young black on the boat who went crazy with the machine gun. Jackson in Atlanta was on the air via satellite with KTLA entertainment reporter Sam Rubin, that's L.A. stuff, to discuss his role in the upcoming RoboCop remake. After an initial exchange of pleasantries with Jackson, who has a reputation for not suffering fools, who already seemed a little put off by Rubin's questions, Rubin brought up Jackson's Super Bowl commercial. Well, let me see if I can find what he said here.
I tell you what, you working for Marvel, the Super Bowl commercial, did you get a lot of reaction to that Super Bowl commercial?
What Super Bowl commercial?
Oh, you know what? You're
as crazy as the people on Twitter.
Right.
I'm not Lawrence Fishburne.
That's my fault. I know that. That was my fault. My mistake. You know what?
We don't all look alike.
You're exactly
we may be all black and famous.
You are
all
guilty.
Don't look alike.
I am guilty.
I am guilty.
He thought you were Bob Dylan.
Right.
You're the entertainment reporter.
I know.
You're the entertainment reporter for this station.
Vlog.
And you don't know the difference between me and Lawrence Fishburne.
My mistake. I apologize. Really, my big mistake. Let's talk about.
That must be a very short line for your job.
I'll say. No. It probably would not be hard to get another person to sit right here. Let's talk about RoboCop.
Oh, hell no.
Really? Really? I apologize.
I'm the other guy. The other one. What's in your wallet?
Right. That's it. That's exactly right.
There's more than one black guy doing a commercial.
There it is. No question about that.
What's in your wallet, black guy.
Okay.
He's the car black guy.
There it is.
Morgan Freeman is the other credit card black guy. You only hear his voice, though, so you probably won't confuse him with Lawrence Fishburne.
You're 100% right. To RoboCop,
there's a heavyweight black guy that's like putting cash down in the seats in a baseball stadium, but he's also the black guy that turns off the house, the water, and the lights when his kid tells him the house is cool. Right. I'm not that guy either.
Do we want to do a list of all the people that you're not?
And I've actually never done a McDonald's or a Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial.
Fair enough.
I know that's surprising.
Right. Fair enough.
Oh, man.
To the original...
And I'm the only black guy in RoboCop that's not a criminal.
Okay.
Other than Michael K. White.
Were you a fan of the Peter Weller version?
Yes. I love RoboCop. When it came out, it was like crazy innovative because it was making fun of the government. It was sarcastic. It was violent. Peter Verhoeven did a great job. I mean, there were even bare breasts in it. None in ours. I think they should have had some, but they didn't put any in it. But yeah, I was a huge fan of the original. And when I heard they were making a remake, I wondered why. I read it, still didn't know why. But when they told me Jose Padilla was going to direct it, I was really interested in doing it because I like his other films that he made in Brazil. And then Michael Keaton, Gary Oldman. How can you say no to that?
Well, I tell you what, it's obviously a great cast, and this director does have some extraordinary credits.
You know who they all are, though, right?
Yes, I do.
I mean, just in case they have some of them on the show, do some work.
I won't make the
do
same...
Do some research. Make sure you don't confuse them with those other white actors. Right there.
This is a well-deserved spanking. Thank you for it. Let me ask you this, but the fact that you brought up that initial question, why are they doing this? A lot of people talk about that, these rebootings or reimaginings of franchises. So what convinced you?
They were successful films. They were successful films. People reboot some of those films because they think there's a new audience out here that hadn't seen them or there has been a...
Well, that's enough of that BS. But you notice how all these ads now are being done by blacks? Now they're fighting among themselves to get the jobs. I'm telling you. And the mulatto women, they're all over the place, like I predicted. That's a Jewish weapon. They've used it before, mulattoism. It's another good way to divide and conquer. Samuel L. Jackson, of course, down south, he would have been called an uppity nigger. But nowadays, he's a very famous, wonderful actor. Well, while we're on the subject, here's Tarantino, who's another race-mixing bastard, Clinton Tarantino. He was raised by black prostitutes, which he admitted that, talked about. He's proud of it, yeah. Let's listen to him. He's talking about that movie, The Django Unchained.
Impossible to watch this movie without thinking about the fact that slavery as a subject has been largely absent from Hollywood cinema in the 100 years, roughly, since Birth of a Nation. What sense of responsibility did you have in terms of making a movie that brings slavery out front and center like this?
Well, I've always wanted to do a movie that deals with America's horrific past with slavery. But the way I wanted to deal with it is, as opposed to doing a straight historical movie with a capital H, I actually thought it could be better if it was wrapped up in genre. I mean, the thing is, it seems to me that so many Westerns that actually take place during slavery times have just bent over backwards to avoid it, as is America's way, which is actually kind of interesting because most other countries have actually been forced to deal with the atrocities that they've committed, and actually the world has made them deal with the atrocities that they've committed. But it's kind of everybody's fault here in America. White, black, nobody wants to really deal with it. Nobody wants to stare at it. And I think it's like in the story of all the different types of slave narratives that could have existed in the 245 years during this time of slavery under America, There's a zillion stories, a zillion dramatic, exciting, adventurous, heartbreaking, triumphant stories that could be told. And living in a world now where everyone says there are no new stories, there's a whole bunch of them, and they're all American stories that could be told.
Well, I will say, though, there were elements of that movie which I found good. I found it good that the true nature and the which was all over the South was the nature of the capitalist plantation owners, to the detriment of small white farming people in the South that lived in many cases under terrible conditions, or at least conditions that we would feel are terrible today. And that movie brought that out quite well, that these plantation owners were dictators, capitalist type dictators with their own police forces and everything else, and then of course their slave chasers that would strap on the guns and go after a slave that's escaped. Well, I think if you and I were on a slave plantation, that we might want to escape, and we probably would want to try to escape all the time. So I wouldn't hold that against the blacks at all. But anyhow, that was the one good thing, and it showed the state of the poor whites as being sort of living off the crumbs of the rich plantation owner and his northern capitalist comrades in mercantilism. So there's almost no film or book that you can't get something good that you should know and understand and work for our side. The people that say I would never see this and I'd never read that I think are fools, because gaining intelligence is like mining. You have to go through a lot of dirt and rocks to find a pebble of gold. I mean, literally tons to get a little bit of gold. And that's the way the learning experience is. You know, they come up with some pretty interesting stuff on this Diversity Incorporated, even though it's 180 degrees out from us. In this interview, which goes on for quite a while, you might want to bring it up and listen to the whole thing. But one thing I want you to watch very carefully if you do, and that is the look on Leonardo DiCaprio's face. They've got about 10 people at this table, and he doesn't talk until later in the interview. In the meantime, he's sitting almost behind Samuel L. Jackson, and he's got the look on his face. I'm pretty good at reading the faces of people. He's got a look on his face like, would you shut up, you goddamn niggers? I got other things to do. But if you'll go up there to Diversity Incorporated about the interview, about the big interview with the cast of the Django, you'll see what I mean. White liberals try real hard to hide it, but it's there. Well, that's about it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Saturn's Day. In the meanwhile, remember, I've got nothing to say. Don't make deals with cops. Don't let anybody take you into a police station or federal office without a warrant. And when you get there, I have nothing to say. Get me a lawyer. That's like garlic to a vampire.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails.
16.5.